This is John from The Bible Project. Today's episode is the first in our series on the Holy Spirit. We've got a new video on the Holy Spirit coming out soon, and this conversation helped us prepare for that.
This is one of those things in the Christian faith where it's almost impossible for us to come to talking about the Spirit with a blank slate.
The role of the Holy Spirit in Christianity today differs from tradition to tradition. Tim and I focus on what the ancients believed about the Spirit.
Reading the Bible is always a cross-cultural experience. We need to check our worldview categories at the door and understand what they meant.
And we discuss what our worldview might look like if we think of the Spirit the way they did.
It invites us to almost have a kind of a re-enchanted view of creation.
Here we go.
So we're getting ready to begin a video, Bible Project video, about the Spirit of God.
The Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit, this is one of those things in the Christian faith where it's almost impossible for us to come to talking about the Spirit with a blank slate.
Yeah.
Most people come with pre-made categories or experiences with Christians or church communities that have a lot to say about the Spirit.
Yeah.
And so one of the most difficult things to do is to come to back to the Scriptures and expect to hear something new. Because we kind of think we maybe already know there's something about the Charismatics and Pentecostals and baptism of the Spirit. That's a big thing. But truly discovering what the Bible is actually saying about the Spirit, for me personally, has been one of the most surprising, mind-opening, life-transforming things in the last number of years.
Wow.
I really, really love this theme.
Cool.
It's going to be hard for me to distill it all into one video, personally. Yeah.
Should we talk about what our paradigms were growing up, just to get that on the table, or
Sure.
Is that not helpful? Should we pretend we have no paradigms?
Well, actually, I think it might be helpful because our growing up experiences, our interactions with church about the Spirit are really different,
yeah.
I know. And that probably represents a spectrum
of most people
who might be listening to this. So,
yeah,
why don't you talk about...
Well, mine's pretty straightforward. My church tradition came from Baptist roots. It was a non-denominational church, but basically it's cessational. Is that what it is?
Cessationists. Yeah.
You were sensationists.
The technical term, meaning?
Meaning the Holy Spirit doesn't really do anything nowadays. Right? I don't know. That's probably...
Well, that's not technically it. They just... that view sees the Holy Spirit as primarily working through the Scriptures and God's people speaking truth into each other's lives based on the Scriptures.
Yeah.
And the experiential presence of Jesus and worship and so on.
But, sure.
But more so.
But the miraculous stuff that happens.
Sure. Miraculous powers. And even just something, you know, experiences that might seem a little more on the mystical or visionary
and
side.
Prophecy and those kind of things.
Right.
They're not needed anymore, so those don't happen. And yeah. There was this definite, there's a belief that the Holy Spirit is part of the Trinity and is super important. I think there was always confusion for me what the difference between Jesus living in you and the Holy Spirit living in you was, but we would talk about both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit helps you, but the Holy Spirit, it was always very clear, the Holy Spirit will never tell you something that's not in the Bible already.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Like,
sure.
Because there was this, I think there was a bit of a fear that you could use the Holy Spirit to do things that were unorthodox.
Sure.
And so you have to have the seatbelt of...
You confuse your own imagination
for the Holy Spirit.
For the Holy Spirit. Sure.
Yeah, so very downplayed, didn't talk about the Holy Spirit a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience.
That was your experience.
Mm-hmm.
My experience growing up, our family attended church and It was mostly in the charismatic or Pentecostal tradition. So Foursquare was the kind of church our family attended for most of my growing up. Yeah, so from a young age, my memories about what Sunday gatherings are were very energetic and action-packed.
Yeah.
With people yelling out in the worship gatherings in unknown languages. And sometimes then somebody would yell out what they thought that that person said. I'm just a little kid taking all this in. People coming up to the front for prayer and then falling over. And there was a whole crew of people who would come for women who like fell over while they were praying. And, you know, if they were wearing dresses. Well, yeah, there'd always be someone to catch them. But if they were wearing dresses, there was a whole crew of people who would come with these cloths and lay these cloths over their legs in case their dress had fallen up.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, so that, I don't know, like just as a little kid.
And that was
I was
normal.
Like, yeah, that's just, this is what Christianity is.
Yeah. So we had a church like that down the street. And and their youth group, I knew the kids at their youth group. And they were a little bit more punk rock than us, that youth group was.
Yeah.
Some cool kids.
Yeah.
And then I remember we started this Bible study in high school, like in the cafeteria. I don't remember. It's like we all got excused from class at some point to do this Bible study. I don't remember how this even worked. But one time they led it and did like a slaying in the spirit thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I had experienced that firsthand.
Mm.
And I was really uncomfortable.
Mm.
Yeah, I just remember it being weird.
Yes. Well, so that's what's interesting for me too. Even though my earliest memories of church were that kind of thing, when I got older, like junior high, I didn't like it. I thought it was very weird. And I remember I didn't like the youth group. I thought it was stupid. I never went. But one event I went to, and there was like a Holy Spirit time where they were inviting people who hadn't been quote baptized in the Spirit, and so they just started praying, and then somebody came up and asked me if I'd received the Spirit.
What did that mean to you at that point?
Had I had one of those experiences that the people did up front on Sundays, and I was like, no.
Yeah. You know?
And then they asked if they could pray for me, and I was kind of standoffish, and then they started to do it anyway, put their hands on my head, applying pressure, trying to push me.
Oh, really?
Over. And I was having none of it. So
you're like, I'm a skateboarder. I have really good balance. Good luck pushing me over.
Yeah. So all that to say, and then after that, I just hated going to church. I started sneaking out of my room. I would mysteriously disappear to my friend's house on Saturday nights so that I wouldn't have to go to church on Sundays. And my parents finally picked their battles and quit forcing me to go. Huh. So when I became a Christian through the ministry of Skate Church, later the church community I became a part of was more like what you grew up in,
right,
John. And so I've had to sort through my baggage because I realize I've had a chip on my shoulder against that upbringing, and some of it is just prideful, you know?
Yeah.
And so I've had to, like, what part of, you know, is my suspicion of that, is there anything that's legitimate? How much is it I'm just reacting against my childhood and I need to get over it? And so that's why, for me, this rediscovery of the Spirit over the last maybe 6 years or so, starting really, it just started with a sermon series that I put together on the Spirit, because I was like, well, I'm just going to go at this, you know, and as an adult with new learning and categories. And
so we kind of come from different places. Your suspicions arise from the slaying in the spirit kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And my suspicions arise from this almost ignoring the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so my rebellion would be like, come on, let's get mystical.
Totally.
Like, the Spirit's got to be doing something way more interesting than I can imagine.
That's interesting, yeah.
But but I'm such, I think the problem is I've learned, however I've learned this, I live in my head. Mm. Like, I live life thinking, not feeling, not experiencing what's happening in the moment.
It's your temperament, you're saying.
It's my temperament.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to fix this over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's just what I've learned.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard when I'm worshiping, singing songs, or anything to have something that feels like mystical. It feels like
the
spirit.
Right.
I'm always just, everything's just like rational thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. So, I hope maybe by the time we finish this conversation, you could have some different categories for that.
Cool.
Because that's been one of the areas where the use of the word and the concept of God's Spirit in the Bible, I think, has some surprising things to say about those categories. So, you know me, good Bible trivia. use it as a party at a party this Friday night, where in the story of the Bible does the Spirit appear for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's staged already, because I just saw you look at the notes.
I do. I would have known this.
You would have known this already.
Yeah,
probably most people.
The Spirit of God hovered over the waters.
Yeah, not only page one, but the second sentence of the Bible. The Spirit appears front and center.
Hovering over waters.
Yeah. So let's, and this is such a great example. We'll camp out on this for a little bit, because right here, there's so much unlearning you have to do, I think, to then relearn what's happening here in the opening verses of the Bible. So here's the first three verses of the Bible. In the beginning, God created
the skies
and the land. Now, the land was wild and waste.
Yeah.
Tohu
vavohu. I remember that from Ray.
Yeah. Darkness was over the surface of the deep abyss, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light, and on goes the sequence of God speaking, and so on. So, whatever your view of Genesis 1 is, it begins with the summary statement, God creates all that is, what's up there and what's down here. And then the focus of the story is that things began with what's down here being wild and waste, darkness. And then in the middle of that darkness and wild and waste is God's Spirit hovering there. So you were going to say something.
Yeah, it might be a tangent. But the earth's there, so land is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's waste in some way, formless and void. Mm-hmm. What's the Hebrew?
Tohu vavohu.
Tohu avohu.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Tohu avohu.
Little rhyme.
Alliteration.
Yeah.
Or it's a rhyme, I guess, yeah. So waste and wild is a way to capture that in English. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So something's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's waste and wild. And the Spirit of God is there, hovering over the waters.
Mm-hmm.
What am I supposed to have in my mind? Am I supposed to have just like a desert landscape and some seas?
Yeah, right. Well, there's two things. One, and it depends on how you interpret the first sentence of the Bible, whether it's a summary statement, like a title almost, for all that follows, or if it's actually the first main action, God making everything. I think the first view is more likely that it's a summary title.
Okay.
So that the story actually begins in the second sentence. Now the land was tohu vavohu, which means this, that from the framework of the author of Genesis 1, creation doesn't begin with God making something out of nothing. It doesn't begin with nothing, and now God's going to make something.
Mm-hmm.
It begins with something.
The land.
It begins with the land, yeah. But the land is in a form of chaotic disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult for us to not impose our modern view of the universe or Big Bang theory. I mean, we don't really even have we have a theoretical concept of nothing. Nothing.
Like space, maybe?
Yeah.
Or even space is something.
But even space is within the framework of the space-time continuum.
Yeah.
But the concept of something and nothing, we think of existence and creation as something coming into physical existence, but before which there was nothing. And that's not the biblical author's framework at all.
They didn't have a perspective of, at one point there was nothing.
Correct. That's a... That's a concept.
As far back as you could go. Well, it was here. It was just waste and wild. It was tohu avohu.
Yeah, yeah. So for the author of Genesis 1, and this is consistent with the view of creation in the Psalms and Proverbs and Job, is that creation begins with a state of disorder and chaotic disorder. And what creation is God bringing order, beauty, purpose, meaning, a garden out of the chaos. That's Genesis 1. And so who is there hovering in the midst of the dark, chaotic wilderness? Oh, sorry, you asked what's the picture you're supposed to have in your head. So it's a paradox of images, I think on purpose. Tohu vavohu is vocabulary used to describe the empty desert, wasteland. But
tohu avohu?
Tohu vavohu.
Vavohu.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's vocabulary used elsewhere in the Hebrew Bible to describe wilderness, empty, uninhabitable wilderness.
Okay.
But then right in the next line, it's darkness was over the surface of the deep abyss of the waters.
So it's a desert waters.
It's a watery desert, which is a contradiction on the literal level.
Okay.
But on the image, on an image-driven level, it makes perfect sense. The wilderness is uninhabitable, uncultivated space.
Not only is it wilderness that you can't survive in because it's barren land, it's also the chaotic seas where you will get destroyed by sea monsters and such things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there are two kinds of spaces in the imagination of the Hebrew Bible that are dangerous, chaotic, untamable.
Mm-hmm.
One's the wilderness.
Okay.
And for Israelites, we're talking about the huge stretch of desert between Israel and the Persian Gulf.
Okay.
Just by the compass, as the crow flies between Jerusalem and the Persian Gulf, is a gigantic desert. Mm. It's the northern edge of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula.
Okay.
It's just sandy desert.
Yeah. And you're not going to survive out there.
No, that's tohu vavohu. And you're not ever going to try and... I mean, Las Vegas.
Yeah. You can put casinos there.
Yeah,
day.
Now we can put casinos in the middle of tohu vavohu. But back then, that was unimaginable. So there's that. And then the other most untamable space is, of course, the ocean, which we still don't really have a handle on.
Yeah.
I guess we can build oil rigs out there. But.
Right. But for them, you go out in the ocean, and it's dangerous. You can get killed by the waters, the storms.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, let's not get into this because it's not really part of the spirit, but like in the other creation, in that Psalms that we talked
about. Psalm 74 depicts that. Yeah,
the sea dragon.
As the seven-headed sea dragon.
That God has to tame.
That God has to slay.
Or slay while he creates.
He crushed the head of the sea dragon.
Seven heads.
Yeah, and that's tapping into, ancient Near Eastern mythological imagery.
Yeah, so not only can you get beat up by the waves and the wind, but there are sea dragons out there too.
Totally. So Genesis 1, within that worldview, that cultural worldview, depicts the story of creation beginning in empty, untamable disorder.
I love that there's a paradox there. There's this
of the water and the desert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's this desert.
Mm-hmm.
Waste and wild, tohu vavohu, but it's water.
Mm-hmm.
A watery desert.
Yes. So it raises the question, so God's going to create sky and land and order out of this desert, wasteland, ocean depth. How?
Yeah.
And the first positive sign, it's kind of like it's a little bit like a mountaintop and then to ski jump. So in the beginning, God created sky and land. Yay, we love it. But it's tohu vavohu and darkness over the surface. And you're like, oh no, what's going to happen?
Dun, dun, dun.
And then who's there to bring the created order out of the chaos? Spirit of God hovering in the midst of the dark, untamable chaos. So what's that about? So two things. One is the Greek and Hebrew vocabulary here. Genesis 1's in Hebrew. And it's a word you have to kind of clear your throat, almost spit a little bit when you say it. Ruach.
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 We have these little covers in front of the microphone so we don't spit on them. But it's kind of like those covers. Spit on it a little bit.
Okay.
And then
nice and moist.
And then in in Greek, the early Jewish, the first Jewish translation of the Hebrew Bible into Greek, called the Septuagint, They translated ruach with the Greek word pneuma.
Yeah.
Which is the same root word from which we get like pneumatic mm-hmm. drills or that kind of thing. So ruach and pneuma, and they overlap in meaning.
Pneumothorax is when your lungs collapse.
Whoa.
I know that because it's happened to
me. It's happened to you. That's right. You told me that story once.
Pneuma. Mm. Also, if you misspell it, it turns into a collection of videos by Rob Bell. Pneuma.
No. That's right. That's right. So an exercise I do when I'm teaching to help kind of get our minds around what ruach means in Greek and Hebrew is to have people put their hand in front of their mouth. You ever been around when I've done this before? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I have people put their hand in front of their mouth and just say something like hello.
Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Hello. If you're listening to the podcast, put your hand in front of your mouth. Say hello. And you feel something on your fingers,
yeah.
Of course. In English, the word we have for that is breath.
Yeah.
Breath. In Hebrew, the word for that is ruach. Ruach. So ruach is its first and most basic meaning throughout the Hebrew Bible is breath. There's loads of uses. I've just kind of picked out a handful in the notes here. So in Genesis 2, this is significant, but God breathes the ruach into the humans.
Does he rock the ruach into the humans?
No, it's a different. I forget that. What's that verb in Genesis? It's cool. Actually, it's a cool verb in Genesis 2. I think it's napach. Yeah, nafach.
Nafach.
Nafach. Nafach.
Wow.
Doesn't that just sounds word. Like a breathing word?
Nafach.
Nafach.
Like if you have a snoring problem.
That's right.
Nafach.
Yeah.
Nafach.
So, or Job in chapter 27, he talks about the ruach of God in my nostrils. Now, we'll talk about why he calls it God's ruach in his nostrils that he breathes in and out. But it's ruach. What he breathes in and out is ruach.
What is the other one? Narach or whatever. The snoring one.
Oh, that's a verb to breathe out.
But it's a different word completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So what's the
difference between those
words? Nafach is the nafach. Act of breathing in and out. Ruach is what it is you're breathing in and out.
Okay, we don't have two different words for that, but in Hebrew there's two different words.
Oh, you're right. We have breathe and breath. Those are related in English, not in Hebrew.
Breathe and breath.
Yep. They're related.
I guess it is two different words technically.
Technically, but they're from the same root.
Yeah.
Yeah, not in Hebrew. In Hebrew, you nafach.
You nafach.
As a verb.
Have ruach.
And the thing that you nafach is your ruach. Yeah. Yeah, there's no verb connected with ruach.
You nafach ruach. You breathe breath.
That's right.
Actually, you breathe air.
Well, in English, that's how we say it. Yeah.
And you have breath?
We say you have breath.
Your breath smells bad.
Your breath.
Something I hear a lot from my wife.
Yeah, it's a noun. It's the thing.
The thing, the air coming out of your mouth is breath.
The air coming out of you, we call breath.
But coming in,
we
call air. Well,
that's interesting. We call, yes.
Is
I
it
never
in,
quite thought
in
about
Hebrew,
that.
Is it?
Ruach.
Both ways.
Ruach.
Ruach in, ruach out.
Ruach in, ruach out. Yeah, I've never thought about that
ruach
distinction
on.
In English, but that's it. Yep, that's exactly right. Okay, so breath. So here's something else interesting about ruach. That's his first and most basic meaning. Another interesting thing, we don't have windows in our recording room, but if you were to look out the window and you were to see trees out in your front yard or something and they were moving,
mm-hmm.
but you can't see anything moving them,
mm-hmm.
they're just, it's like they're dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Our English word to describe what it is that's moving the trees
wind
is wind. In Hebrew, you would call that the ruach.
Hmm.
Ruach. It's the ruach moving the trees. So ruach, the common denominator between the ruach coming in and out of you, and the ruach moving the trees.
It animates things.
Is it? Yes, it animates things, and it's invisible. You cannot see what it is. You can't see your breath.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's really cold.
Unless it's really cold. and you can't see the wind. And it's connected with energy and power and animation. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about an invisible energy that animates things, that makes them move. And so think about in English, we have totally disassociated the thing that animates the trees with the thing that animates me.
Right.
But in Hebrew,
same thing.
It's the same thing. And so that then is grounded in a deeper level, a deeper idea that's underneath both of those. Namely, where did I get my ruach? What moves the trees? Mm-hmm. What also makes the rabbits and the birds, what animates them? Because they are around the trees too. Mm-hmm. And then what is it that animates me? Because sometimes I go around the trees. And so there's something invisible that animates the trees and the birds and me. And in the Old Testament worldview, the thing that is doing all of that is also ruach, but it's God's ruach.
God's ruach is doing all of that.
God's ruach is animating everything. So this is interesting. There are many, many places in the Old Testament.
And they don't mean, sorry.
Yeah,
by that, they don't mean God's breath. They just mean this energy.
Invisible presence and power that is divine.
Okay.
God.
Yeah.
So we'll spell this out. We'll spell this out more.
If I'm an ancient thinker and you're talking about that, am I picturing some being like blowing and then that breath coming into me and the rabbit and rustling the wind? Mm. Or am I just thinking more abstractly and thinking there must be this kind of power?
Well, so think about, again, trying 3,000 years ago, put yourself, what in your imagination could wind be? So from the Exodus story, chapter 14, the main actor, how does God act to part the great Red Seas? He sends a strong east wind and turns the sea into dry land.
Is that ruach there?
Mm-hmm. He sends a strong east ruach, eastern ruach. Hmm. There are many, many psalms and proverbs that talk about the God bringing out the ruach to send the rain and to water the farm fields and so on. So God's connected to what we call wind, but in Hebrew thought, it's God's ruach that orchestrates the ruach that commands the weather, essentially. Hmm. It's a way of them seeing that God providentially sustains and is involved in all of animated life, including the invisible wind.
So, but this is so difficult because I don't think that way. Mm-mm. I know what wind is. It's like, you know, pressure changes.
Yeah.
In the air.
Yeah.
I know what breath is. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm breathing in oxygen and all sorts of other things, but then I'm using the oxygen and breathing out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Yeah. Carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
I know that that's part of keeping me alive because I need the oxygen. I don't know why I need the oxygen, actually. My blood needs it or something.
Yeah, it's blood. Yeah, it's blood.
Yeah.
Our blood cells need
it. Blood cells need it.
For oxygenating our muscles or something like that. I'm kind of embarrassed I don't understand that more.
I bet a lot of people don't know. But we know that you hold your breath long enough and you're not.
Yeah, you're done for. Yeah.
But I know that's not the only thing animating me.
Yeah.
I know that I need calories and
proteins. And
So I guess I'm trying to say I have a more sophisticated view of the world.
Yeah.
When I say sophisticated, more advanced, more.
Yeah. Well, it's informed by a whole body of information.
Yeah.
That we have accessible to us that the biblical authors
and I don't even really understand it. Yeah. It's accessible to me, but I don't understand it.
Yeah, totally.
But I guess here's my point. In order for us to even begin this conversation, I have to try to unlearn that and then begin to think how humans would have thought before they knew that. Mm-hmm. I have to start to imagine mm-hmm. that the wind is ruach and what's in and out of my mouth is ruach. And it's just, I have to get into a different mind space. It takes a lot of imagination.
Yes.
It takes a lot of
focus
and clearing my brain. All for us to even be able to begin to talk about what on earth the Bible means by God's Spirit.
Correct. That is what I'm telling you.
that's a lot.
It is a lot. Two things. So one is, I think to have a sympathetic reading of what the biblical authors are trying to say when they use this word, we need to check our worldview categories at the door and understand what they meant. But what we then have to do at some point is come back and relate it to our view of the universe.
Yeah.
And we could do it later, we could do it now. I would argue that ultimately we end up in the same place.
Sure.
You have a different understanding of the physical mechanisms that and processes by which the universe works. But ultimately, this is a way of talking about God as the originator and author of existence. And that all of existence in the created order originates and is sustained by the Creator God. And Ruach is a way of talking about how that God is personally present, sustaining and orchestrating his world.
I think the thing that I was tripping out on is that for me to understand, okay, this isn't some tangential, is that the right word? Tangential.
Mm.
This isn't some
secondary or
topic. This is the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
This is really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so this isn't like angels or something where it's like, well, maybe I understand it, maybe I don't, who really cares?
Mm.
I'd like to. This is like the Holy Spirit that's supposed to be living in me and making me a new creation.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't Paul talk about it like groaning on my behalf
all
this stuff. I'm supposed to be intimately involved with the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
And for me to begin to appreciate how the Bible views the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm.
I have to get into a different mindset, a different worldview than the one I'm accustomed to, just to get on a level playing field with the metaphors that it's using.
Yeah.
And it's important for me to understand the metaphors it's using, not because those are the exact, like that's not exactly how it works. That's the metaphors they were using to describe something much bigger and much more interesting. But if I want to understand the way they're describing it, I have to think within their metaphors.
Yes.
And those aren't the metaphors I think in.
Yeah, they're not natural.
They're not natural.
To you.
So for me to just get to get to bat, you know, with this topic.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a great way of putting it. Yeah, that's right.
It's a massive imaginative effort.
Mm. Yeah, here we're back to, we've been here before, where it's the fact that what the scriptures are is God revealing himself in and through people. And actually, the Spirit's role in that is really important, and we'll talk about that. And so that happens through language that's from a particular people and time. And for them to even talk about God, they are going to do it in their language and their frame of reference. That's why Genesis 1 talks about a chaotic desert ocean.
Yeah.
And not quarks and dark matter.
Right.
Because that, you know, like.
Sure.
So, yeah, you're right. Reading the Bible is always a cross-cultural experience.
Yeah.
And for the Spirit, I think the reason why it's difficult is because this is such a core part of following Jesus.
Yeah.
The Spirit's a really big deal. And it involves adopting a new and different type of worldview, at least to get my mind around what the Spirit is and what the Spirit does. Okay.
Yeah. So I've emphasized how difficult it is, but let me try to make sure I'm there. So I breathe in Ruach. I breathe out Ruach. And then to me, that is an energy that's animating me. And I know this because when I see people stop breathing, they stop animating.
That's right. It's very intuitive.
Very intuitive.
Yeah. If you see somebody collapse on the ground, the first thing you're checking for is their pulse.
Yeah.
Or if there's any ruach.
Yeah.
It's one of the most basic signs.
So I just noticed that everyone who's alive is ruaching. So I've observed that.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking around and like I see leaves ruffling
or clouds moving.
Clouds moving and dandelion seeds floating around. And I don't know why, but I can feel it. I can't see it. And I go, you know what? That's the same substance that's keeping me alive. And everyone else I know, human and non-human alive, that's Ruach. And then when I want to understand God, I think, well, all this energy, this is coming from God. That's God's Ruach. When I say it's God's Ruach, I mean, I don't mean like he's up there breathing all of this technically,
right?
But just that this power comes from him.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's the question of where did I get my Ruach? Did I make it for myself? Like, what is this animating energy? Which is a 3,000-year-old way of asking, where did this all come from? Why are we here?
Yeah.
What's driving all of this? And the biblical explanation for that is right there in the second sentence of the Bible. It's God's own personal life animating energy.
It was hovering over creation before it was even ordered.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a puzzle because the first sentence says God created sky and land, but then the second sentence of the Bible, who is it that is there in the midst of tohu vavohu, that's the instrument through which God creates, and it's God's Ruach. So right there in the first two sentences, you're like, wait, so who created, God or God's Ruach? I mean, the story, are they different? Are they the same?
Right.
And then it's intentionally connected. The third verse of the Bible is then, what does God and God's Ruach do to bring order? And verse 3 begins, and God spoke. And of course, speaking is precisely what you do
with your Ruach,
to breathe out your Ruach. So you have God, Spirit of God, and God speaking a word that releases the Ruach out to bring order and creation. So there's already this complex depiction of even the God of the Bible, of how is God present here in the world doing his work? It's God's Ruach. Well, it's God, yes. It's God's Ruach. There's some complexity to God's identity that's beginning to be explored even in this vocabulary. It's really interesting. God's Ruach comes in the story of the Bible then to have an independent character. Like it's its own, this Ruach is its own being and character out there doing stuff. And we'll see this again in the New Testament where it's the Spirit, but sometimes the Spirit of God, sometimes it's the Spirit of Jesus, or sometimes it's just Jesus, or sometimes there's this overlapping within God's identity. So, but all that to say, the Ruach is, in the Old Testament, a way of talking about God, the Creator God's personal life energy and presence here with me, which goes back to that question, where did I get my Ruach? And right all across, it's a gift of God. So that's the image in Genesis 2. God breathes. So God takes dirt, forms the human, but that's still not fully human. So God breathes the breath of life and animates So the vision of humans is that humans are creatures. They come from dirt. They also go back to it. But there is also something about humans that is heaven. It's heaven and earth.
That's divine.
That's divine. And it doesn't say what that is. It just uses the image of divine Ruach that animates and energizes humans.
So the same energy, the same force that hovered over creation, turning it in from chaos to order,
mm-hmm.
enters humans.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they are a combination of earthlings and
yeah,
but with this spark of divinity.
This spark of divine breath. And actually, it's not just humans.
The animals
have ruach. All creatures have divine ruach. Humans for sure. Job talks about the breath of God in my nostrils. Ecclesiastes says, when you die, the dust returns to the ground and your ruach returns to God who gave it.
Hmm.
So it doesn't mean some immaterial version of you floats up to God. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about your ruach, the animating life energy that you've been borrowing.
It wasn't you. It's not your identity.
No.
So it's not like a soul that you identify with.
No.
It's just the energy that was keeping you alive.
Is now given back to God who gave it.
Hmm.
Your batteries.
Yeah.
God gave you batteries for a while, and then you died and took them back. Which is Job 34. He says, if God decides to take back his ruach and gather his ruach back to himself, all mortal creatures would expire. So even the ruach that I'm breathing right now isn't actually mine.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, this is all very intuitive. If you've ever seen a human born, you watch them inhale their first ruach. So ruach is something from the first breath that we receive from outside ourselves.
Yeah.
And it is the thing keeping us alive.
Yeah.
And the last thing a human does is breathe it back out.
Mm.
So this is all very intuitive, you know, to the human experience.
Yeah, there's something essential to our life that we didn't come with.
Mm-hmm.
We had to receive it as a gift when mm-hmm. we were born.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays with us our entire existence.
Mm-hmm.
And this is ruach.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we die, we exhale it and it's gone out of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never ours.
Never ours.
It was always something we were...
That's right.
We were lent.
Yeah. 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 It was lended to us. Yeah. That's the vision of human ruach, which is actually God's ruach. This is different than Eastern, like pantheistic worldviews where I'm God, you're God, the rabbit's God. Because I'm not God. Even though God's ruach is what animates me. I'm a creature who has received ruach as a gift. That's why Job says it's God's ruach in my nostril. He didn't have to give it to me, but he does. And then when he chooses, he will take it back.
So this isn't your soul.
It's not your soul. Yeah.
And so animals have it. Mm-hmm. We have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the wind around us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So when we come down then to our English word, spirit, the spirit of God, we're talking about...
Because ruach is often translated spirit.
Spirit.
Or usually.
Yeah, just second. The ruach of God. So what is it
ever translated in our English translations as anything else but spirit, breath? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When Job says, the ruach of God is in my nostrils.
That's translated breath.
It's translated, the breath of God is in my nostrils.
Mm.
But it's the same exact phrase as the second is in Genesis.
Genesis 1:2, that says the Spirit of God hovered.
Spirit of God. The Ruach of God.
It is weird to say the Spirit of God is in my nostrils. It's a weird thing to say.
Yeah, totally. It doesn't make any sense. For us. So this is why it's hard for us. There's one Hebrew word to talk about my breath, the wind in the trees, God's energy that he lends me to keep me alive, and his animating presence that sustains all of creation. And then all of that is rooted in a concept of who God is, namely that God is ruach.
God is ruach.
God is ruach. He's invisible.
Mm-hmm.
and he is a everywhere animating invisible energy and personal presence that authors all that exists. But when we use spirit, what we're doing is we're saying it's personal. It's a person, not just simply an energy.
Yeah.
So pantheism would be an impersonal energy
yeah.
in which you and I all participate and exist. Yeah. So we are all divine. And that's not the biblical worldview.
Spirit is, where does that word come from?
Yeah, do your online Oxford dictionary search.
Anglo-French, esprit. Modern French, spirit, Latin, spiritus.
Mm.
think it's Latin.
A Latin word?
Spiritus means breathing.
Huh.
And wind.
Oh, spirit, like in, yeah. Expiration?
Yeah, that would all come from the same.
Yeah, spirit.
Spirare, to breathe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then from a Proto-Indo-European, they think it comes from pais, to blow. So it all comes from that metaphor of wind.
It does.
In Latin as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
In modern English, spirit, which comes from the same breath word, refers to a personal being that is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that came to be the English translation of ruach when it was talking about not breath or wind, but about God himself when he is invisibly, personally present somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a couple examples that are really interesting. Psalm 104. This is so cool. Verse 29. The poet says, "If you, God, if you hide your face from a creature, they are dismayed. When you take away their ruach, they die and return to the dirt. But when you send forth your ruach, they are created, and you revitalize the surface of the ground." So when a creature breathes out its ruach, dies.
Mm-hmm.
But when you send your ruach, creation. So it's this connection.
But their ruach is his ruach.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So it's their ruach that they... You take it away, their ruach, it becomes God's again. That's what he's saying. But then, when God sends forth his own ruach, that's when creation happens.
Hmm.
Now, this isn't talking about Genesis 1. In the context, it's talking about the life and death of animals, like deers and lions and so on. Like, imagine a pregnant deer squatting in the field, giving birth to its young.
Mm-hmm.
This poet would call that creation.
Mm.
And that is God's ruach, creating new life there as it takes its first breath. But it comes from a person. It's a way of thinking about life. Where did life come from? Which, as I understand it, modern biology is still puzzling over that one.
Sure.
And it's a way of saying God is the ultimate originator of life, and that it's a personal being that stands behind all of this. That's the idea.
Not only is it says when you send your ruach, they are created, the animals, and you revitalize the surface of the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
So now it's talking about just like compost, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And like,
yes,
the biology of the earth.
Yeah, it's just the what we would call it, like the ecological cycle or something like that.
Right. So the ruach is responsible not only for giving breath to the animals, but for the harvest or the vegetation.
The energy that causes the plants to spring up out of the ground. Right. Yeah. Which is almost certainly what Psalm 33 means when it says, "By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, their starry hosts by the ruach of his mouth." Similar idea, except that here it's up in the heavens.
So even the stars populate out of ruach.
Yeah, their movements. What makes them move and what ordered them? Why aren't they always flying around like the shooting stars? What makes those certain ones stay fixed and move in these orderly patterns?
When it says made here, does it mean like appeared or formed in the same way that like an animal's made?
I think made in terms of where did they come from? Who is responsible for them? Yeah.
Okay. So this is interesting because it's like, so the ruach is responsible for an animal being alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's responsible for vegetation coming up out of the earth.
Yes.
It's responsible for the stars appearing in the sky and the order they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's responsible for keeping this all going.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not creation and then the sustaining and ordering and continued order of creation. Those aren't separate ideas in the Old Testament.
Mm.
That's why a deer being born in a field can be described as creation in Psalm 104. Creation is God's ongoing work in developing and sustaining the world. That's as opposed to we think of it as a moment.
Right. it wasn't there, now it's there.
Yes.
It's a moment.
Yeah. So maybe a way to tie all this together is to say, in the Old Testament, there's this, I think, beautiful, aesthetically, it's mm-hmm. beautiful. It's much more similar to Eastern and mystical worldviews than kind of a modern mm-hmm. Western materialist worldview, of that God's personal presence is what animates and energizes all of creation from its first moments of origin right on through. And that there is a personal divine presence that animates everything that exists. And that's, or as Paul says, right, in him we live and move and have our being. Mm. He says in Acts chapter 17. That's exactly right. That statement of Paul's comes from a mind saturated in the Old Testament.
It's a much more mystical mindset to think that I'm breathing in God, I'm looking out and seeing God animating branches.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm breathing in the energy God is lending to me. I'm not breathing in God. Okay. I'm breathing in what the energy He's let me borrow. I'd say it's similar to Eastern pantheism, but it's different in that I'm not it. The rock isn't God or the rabbit. We all are creatures dependent on God, who's not an energy.
So there's this distinction between God mm-hmm. and his energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I am breathing in his energy.
Mm-hmm.
And his energy is animating the trees. His energy has ordered the stars, keeps them in motion, and allows stuff to grow out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is, mm-hmm. It's saturating
yes.
creation.
There's something that makes all this go. That's what my son Roman...
In him, I live and move and have my being.
Yes. It's what my son Roman asked me when we, our first... There were no slugs in Wisconsin when I was finishing my PhD in Wisconsin and he was born. There are no slugs there. When we moved here, when he turned 3, he noticed slugs for the first time. We were watching one go, and he asked me, I swear this is what he meant, because these are the words that he used. He said, Dada, what makes it go?
Mm.
And I was stunned. I was like, really? He's asking me this question. Like,
how old was he?
He was 3.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, what does make it go, buddy? You know, what makes anything go? And then, you know, the moment that I was like, is he really asking me that? The next thing he wanted to do was spit on it. But and then he moved on. Like, his mind had already moved on. So I don't know what he really meant by that question.
Yeah.
But he had never really
seen... It has no legs. How is it moving?
Yeah. I'd like to think he was a philosopher at 3. But that's the question. Like, what makes it go?
What makes things go?
Yeah. A modern...
Well, So you're saying there's a distinction between God and this energy. But when Paul says, for in him we live and move and have our being.
Okay, yeah.
He says not in his energy do we live and move and have our being.
That's true.
In God we live and move and have our being.
In God's own self. Okay, all right. I'll maybe step back from that one a little bit. Yeah, we'll talk about this when we talk about Paul and the Spirit. But yeah, he believes that human life and all of life is, there's just a very thin veil separating us from the life of the divine.
Because if we fast forward, we know that the Spirit of God is, in Christian orthodoxy, is part of the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
So it is God.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point in the narrative, it's his breath.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we don't...
personal, invisible presence.
His
that personal energizes presence. Things. Yeah.
And so I wouldn't say I'm breathing in God. I would say I'm breathing in God's Ruach.
Mm-hmm. The Ruach of God is in my nostril. Yeah, okay. As Job would say. Yeah. It invites us to almost have a kind of a re-enchanted view of creation.
Yeah, it is very enchanting.
Mm-hmm. I think it's exactly the view of our existence that was lost in the Enlightenment.
Sure.
Because we're tempted to just view our emotions as chemicals in our brain, mm-hmm. or view the sunset merely as the interaction of light with photons or atmosphere, that kind of thing.
As a cocktail of different...
Yeah.
Is it chemicals?
Molecules and so on. And what we've done is given names to the physical components and processes mm-hmm. of the material world. But what we haven't answered by those is the metaphysical questions of where did it come from?
What makes it go?
What makes it go? And why is it here? And that's what the language of Ruach is. It's asking us to see that there is a person behind the sunset and the air that I breathe and watching the birth of my child and the slug. And through the story of the Bible, that is a person who wants to be extremely close to us and for us to recognize that closeness and embrace it and live in it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bible Project podcast. In the next episode, we're going to continue our discussion on the Holy Spirit. Really looking forward to that. Our video on the Holy Spirit is slotted to come out in mid to late March of 2017. You can find it on our website, thebibleproject.com, and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thebibleproject. Hey, it is 2017, and this year we're going to be a lot more diligent on our release schedule for this podcast. We're hoping to start releasing a podcast episode every week. Up till now, it's been a little bit random when we drop them. Thank you for your reviews on iTunes. Those are really helpful. And thanks for saying hi to us. We're on Facebook and Twitter. And just thanks for being a part of this.